flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Red Bigs. Bigs time.
Bigs.
With Mully and Haw. Bigs time.
The Bigs Report.
With Brad Biggs.
Bigs time.
Bigsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune. Long time contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he joins us on the Aturo Hotline. Aturo, your all-weather tire.
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you got the story, buddy. You've got all the stories. What do we make of the coaching staff as it's currently constituted? Be interesting to hear what the coordinators have to say today.
Yeah, you're going to have all three coordinators chat a little bit later on today. I think it's like 11 o'clock. So, you know, Declan Doyle to be able to kind of talk about his fast rise and how he views the role and challenges that are going to come with it. Dennis Allen on, maybe how his philosophy will mesh with some of the players that are currently on the roster. And then Richard Hightower, of course, could address how that unit improved during the second half of the season. I think the Bears consistently got better on special teams this past year.
That's an interesting take. We'll get back to that in a moment. I want to know what you think about what they're looking for at the offensive line position, because you look at Dan Roshar, you look at Justin Fry from Ohio State, Joe Rudolph seems to be in the mix. When you go to the college game to find your solution for your offensive line coach, what are they looking for, Brad?
You're looking for a teacher, right? Ultimately, what's a coach? A coach is a teacher. I think you're looking for someone who can develop what's going to be a new group. And That's a big hire. A lot of people tell you that the offensive line coach is the most important position coach, maybe the, you know, third most important guy on the staff for a head coach, because we all know if you're not playing well in the trenches, it's going to be difficult to win, certainly difficult to win consistently. And it's interesting because you get college coaches interviewing for not just Bears jobs now, but that's happened for some of the other teams in this cycle now. And it seems like the names get out a lot easier than they did previously, right? And I, you know, some people would speculate that that's because in some instances, and I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form this applies to the Bears, but in some instances, people feel college coaches attempt to leverage NFL interest for more pay from the schools. Because 5-10 years ago, you didn't hear about college guys interviewing for jobs,
right?
Unless they got the job, right? Hey. The Bears are hiring a cornerbacks coach. He's from the University of pick your school.
Right.
You didn't hear about candidates that interviewed for jobs and didn't get them.
I'm curious, Brad, when we talk about Richard Hightower, why was he retained? I mean, just because he's like seemingly the only guy that's coming back. We saw a couple. I know you had a list of about five guys. Two of them got jobs with Flusi yesterday in Dallas. Is Hightower the only guy coming back, and why?
That unit got better as the season went on. I think they ranked fifth or sixth in DVOA. They were easy top 10 in rankings that John Bonamago, who was a coordinator for a long time, compiles on a weekly basis. I haven't seen the Rick Goslin stuff yet this year, but they made a jump there at the end of the year, and you saw the punter improved. I mean, Cairo Santos has been pretty consistent guy for them for a long time, but they had some core guys, and some of them were younger players that played pretty well for him in terms of coverage and those types of things. So I believe there's value in having a coach that's on the roster that can kind of let the new coaches know, hey, this is what the experience is with this guy. Here's what he does well. Here's what he hasn't done well. Like, they were interested in Darren Rizzi, mm-hmm. and Rizzi had a whole bunch of opportunities or a few anyway. Seems like those have dwindled. If he doesn't get the Saints job, which most people are reporting is likely to go to Kellen Moore, the Eagles offensive coordinator after the Super Bowl, in which case you would figure that Rizzi would wind up reuniting with Sean Payton with the Denver Broncos, which is where I think most people have figured Rizzi was going to land all along.
I don't want to speak for everybody, Brad, but I think the head-scratching element of the Hightower coming back is that the misses were pretty high-profile misses, and the blocked field goal operation when you don't make a change and you thought, well, that's obvious that you're going to make a change, and they didn't, and it was a failed process. And I thought sometimes when you have things like that happen, you cost you your job. Matt Eberflus, Exhibit A. So I think that's the surprise, as much as I understand why you want a holdover coach, maybe to bridge the gap and transition and all those things. It just was a little bit of a surprise that he would be the guy that's coming back.
I can understand that because they had high-profile special teams errors in the middle of that season. There's no question about that. But Hightower's been doing it a long time, and they obviously believe he will be able to keep them at a high level to start next season. The only other guy I think right now that's got a shot at returning is probably Jim Dray, the tight ends coach. He, I think, could be in the mix. Is he definitely coming back? I don't know that. These things are really fluid, and – it moves fast, and coaches can feel like they're in a good spot to that they're going to get an offer from a team or a head coach 1 hour, and 3 hours later it can be completely different. Like, this, no, the job's not there anymore. You're not the guy for it. So we'll see. They continue working to put this together, and you would think that certainly by this time next week, the Bears would have probably the majority of that staff for Ben Johnson filled out.
Do we know what kind of defense Dennis Allen is going to run? In other words, I think we have an understanding of what his background is and where he came from, and he's got a lot of that Greg Williams kind of, you know, assault stuff going on. But so you're changing from a cover two. Does that change what you're looking for in terms of a three technique? Does it change what you're looking for at your linebacker position? I'm just curious how you feel. They're going to play a lot of man coverage, which is great for Jalen Johnson. He will be featured. What do you think those kind of – what do you expect him to say today when asked those questions?
Yeah, I don't think he's – Dennis Allen's been a head coach twice.
Yeah.
So I would guess he's going to talk and not give you a whole lot of specifics. He's probably going to defer to the general manager and the head coach. But you raise a good question, and these are things maybe the Bears are still going to find out moving forward when you get – sort of the profile that the coordinator has for each position. You know, what does the defensive end look like in a perfect world? What kind of measurables is he looking for in his linebackers? You know, because yes. Obviously, I think one of the first thing you want in your linebackers is instincts, right? And everybody's going to want that. But are they a little bigger? Are they a little smaller? So, but I think he'll be buttoned up on that. I don't see him sharing the grand plan, but it's going to be interesting. They're going to stay in a 43, and a lot of their guys would have fit for a move to a 34, which is it's a little bit overblown because teams are in 40 front so much with sub packages and nickel that you're not looking at that big of a difference. But as much focus as there is on the offense and the need to build around Caleb Williams and the need for them to improve the offensive line, they've got to get better defensively because outside of that red zone defense, which was highly ranked this past season, was excellent, they really dropped off and dramatically so in some other key metrics. So the run defense was really poor. Yards per pass attempt allowed was really poor. The pass rush in terms of sacks per pass attempt wasn't bad at all, believe it or not. But I don't know that you'd say their pass rush passed the eye test most weeks. So they've got to get better there as well.
So, Brad, we know about Declan Doyle, 28-year-old coaching prodigy that we'll hear from later today as the offensive coordinator. But last night also, it looks like Ben Johnson added grizzled veteran 37-year-old Press Taylor to the offensive staff as the passing game coordinator. Now, they didn't overlap, but Zach Taylor, Press's brother, did coach with Ben Johnson in Miami for about 3 or 4 seasons. What do you know about that relationship, and how surprised were you that they added a passing game coordinator?
I'm not surprised they added a passing game coordinator. That's kind of standard on most staffs now. Mm. And it's really remarkable how large some of these coaching staffs have grown. But I think you see more teams that have that now than don't. And it's sort of this vague title because it sounds like he's in charge of something, but really we all know Ben Johnson's going to be in charge of both the passing game and the running game. But he's a guy that's been around an awful long time, was in Philadelphia for quite a while when they had a lot of success. and he worked with Doug Peterson there. You know, it wasn't too long ago you heard his name as a potential candidate as head coach. Now, I don't think there's been any steam behind his name for that kind of job here in a little bit. But when he was rising in Philadelphia and went from a QC coach to an assistant quarterbacks coach to a quarterbacks coach, and the Eagles were really winning, that's something that you kind of heard, like, hey, this guy could be on the track to that. Whether or not he can get back onto that, I don't know. But he's another guy that, yeah, they're going to have a young staff. It ought to be high energy. And we'll see ultimately kind of how it comes together.
You know, they have talked about this idea of sort of, you know, going down to the studs on different things they're doing. We've asked you about the offensive line before. When you think about, you know, and even if it's just guard to guard, as we've talked about, they got five guys headed to some form of free agency. Will they re-sign one of their own? Do you think there's anybody among that group? And, you know, we know who they are, Tevin Jenkins, and I guess Matt Pryor. Is there anybody?
Coleman Shelton's a free
Coleman
agent.
Coleman Shelton,
yeah.
He started every game, but he was on a one-year deal too. And I think just when you look, Larry Borum, when you go through those names, is there anyone that you would have back, even as a depth piece, or is it more looking elsewhere because it didn't work out?
Yeah, you bring up a good question because they need to improve their talent significantly, and they also need bodies because they had so many guys coming out of contract on the offensive line. So I think in the big picture, it's probably a blessing with them wanting to get better talent on the offensive line. It's not like they've got to cut guys that are making too much money to create space. Like Nate Davis already got himself cut, so yeah, he's gone. Of the pending free agents, in my opinion, the guy with a potential opportunity to be re-signed is Matt Pryor. And not as a starter, right? You're not gonna pay him to come back and man the fort at the right guard like he did this past season. But you look at what he did, and he was third on the team in terms of offensive linemen and snaps. He played more than 1,000 snaps. He started 15 games. He could be kind of the super utility guy in that you could put him out there at tackle or guard. So you're talking about a player that could, in a pinch, if needed, play four of the five spots for you on the offensive line. I think he expressed interest in putting down some roots. I would imagine you could get something reasonable done with him, but they don't have an offensive line coach yet, so they haven't even jumped into the process of taking a look at the players that were on the roster that they potentially could consider to bring back. But they need to get better, like 1-9 in terms of offensive linemen. And if Pryor's your 7 as opposed to being like your 3 this past year,
yeah,
you're probably in a better spot. But again, that's something that I think the new coaching staff is going to need to take some time to go through the tape, meet as a group, meet with the personnel staff, and sort of craft a plan from there.
Same will be true for the skill position players, I think. And you just don't know what assumptions that we're making now, if they will agree with some of those assumptions. We think we know that Cole Kmet is a guy that is in the middle of your passing game and should be targeted more than he has been, and other things about maybe DeAndre Swift or one of the wide receivers, but we don't have to go too far back. We know Bears history. We know that Mike Martz came in here, and next thing you know, they're trading Greg Olsen and regretted it forever. And I just wonder if there's somebody like that, Brad, on this roster that we're assuming that is going to be a contributor to the 2025 team that they may look at very differently.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, that was an all-time fun scoop to get, the Greg Olsen thing. That was They had not reported to training camp. It's like 11:15 at night. My phone rings. It's the guy with another team. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? Bears are trading Greg Olsen, huh? And I said, I've got no idea what you're talking about. It's like, the agent sent out an email. He said they've got permission to shop them. I said, really? He said, yeah, I'll forward it to you. So he sent me the email that Drew Rosenhaus had sent the other 31 teams that Greg Olsen was on the block. I don't think that's going to happen to Cole Kmet. The hunch I get is they probably feel like Ben Johnson and sort of philosophically what he wants to do and scheme-wise what he wants to do is going to really benefit a player that they've invested in, right? And listen, we've seen how the Lions use tight ends and involve them in both the pass and run game, so I don't think there should be any concern about how Cole Kmet will fit into this offense. You're wondering exactly kind of how and how much, but I see him being a part of it.
Okay.
Tidbit for you, Brad. I heard yesterday that that Ben Johnson has been bright his whole life. He got a 36 on the ACT when he was coming out of college.
Well, I mean, he could get in the room with the if he got in the room with the three of us, Ben Johnson would be the smartest guy in the room.
Especially with the three of us.
Okay. Not arguing that, Brad. Just caught a stray there. That's okay. Didn't expect
we're all catching a stray in that one.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I guess so. It's okay. You can insult us as long as you're insulting yourself with us.
Good stuff, Brad.
Yeah, you're the fast buddy.
Have fun down there.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
That is our guy, Brad Biggs, football man of the Chicago Tribune.
I'm not trying to get Cole Kmet traded. I'm not even suggesting that he would be, but I do think it's worth remembering, number one, the Greg Olsen example, but number two, T.J. Hockenson was traded by the Lions about midway through Ben Johnson's first year as the play caller in Detroit.
That's interesting.
You do wonder about what specifically he's looking for in his ideal tight end or whatever position we're talking about.
Does Sam LaPorta come then?
Yes.
Sam LaPorta comes in,
Hockenson goes out because he fit the traits.
Well, that was a pretty
one-handed catch. Whew. He's made a few of those.
All right. We've got your calls next, 312-644-6767. I want to talk about a couple of things along that line next, David. Mully and Haw on the screen.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yep.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sure.
I think the biggest thing for the Bears is the offensive line coach. You just mentioned it, not bringing in Hank Fraley. You know, I was curious if he would go somewhere. That looks like they're interviewing some college guys, including one I'm familiar with, Joe Rudolph, who is the offensive line coach at Notre Dame, another Badger, another tight end to now offensive line, but tight end coach, I should say, it's offensive line coach, but whatever. Then I think that is huge for them because of how much I think that building inside out is going to be huge. And I think Ben Johnson knows the relationship with the line coach is huge as well. So that's kind of where my eyes are gravitating more than offensive coordinator, you know, because I feel like Johnson's got it. You know, Johnson's shown me enough that I think he has a good handle on it. And I'm excited to see what he does with Caleb in the whole offense, really.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is Nate Tice talking about and he's right. He's right that the offensive line coach is super important. And I, too, was hoping it would be Hank Fraley just because he's got a lot of experience in that area. But
hey, a lot of good coaches.
There's good coaches out there.
A lot of good coaches on the offensive line.
Yeah.
He mentioned one of them, Joe Rudolph, who as a Notre Dame head coach or assistant coach certainly made that offensive line what it was this season, a very good one for the Irish. Also comes from a tenure at Wisconsin. Get this. 2015 to 2021, while Joe Rudolph was at Wisconsin, he had 9 All-Americans.
Wow.
9 first-team All-Big Ten selections, the Remington Award winner, and 6 offensive linemen who were drafted. So he understands what an NFL lineman looks like. And a lot of times when you go to these college coaches, they bring an energy, they bring an approach, and they bring a new set of eyes to, frankly, a group that could use it.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that at all. I think that when we talk about where this team is at, you know, you look just coming out of the season and you got one offensive lineman that you trust in Darnell Wright, and that is it. I mean, you don't really feel any great. I mean, Braxton Jones has been a real great story, drafted in the 5th round and all that, and a starter at left tackle, but you know, probably better as a pass blocker than a run blocker, and a guy that, frankly, coming off that injury, you're not sure if he's back on time, if he's back. I mean, you could use an upgrade there, frankly.
You could, and his injury buys him more time and maybe more understanding or patience.
Yes.
But I do think that he is an essential player in this regard. We talk about how Ben Johnson is now a partner with Ryan Poles and how Ryan Poles' role has been maybe diminished or his power has been diminished.
Yes.
Guys like Braxton Jones,
mm-hmm.
not specifically him necessarily, but they no longer, I think, are given the benefit of the doubt because they were drafted by the Ryan Poles regime that failed.
That's fair. Yeah.
So in 3 years, nothing worked, really. There have been some successes. Darnell Wright is still arrow pointing up. Caleb Williams, arrow pointing up. You fell into those two. You fell into the Caleb Williams thing, but I think you made a trade to get there. My point being, assumptions made about players just because they were drafted by Ryan Poles, I'm not sure how secure those would be.
You know, and I think you asked a good question about the running game, and you know, you were asking about some of the different skill position players. Mm-hmm. I include the running back in that. We don't know what this guy, how he looks at that position. What he, you know, they had pretty good running backs in Detroit, and they invested high to get a running back while he was in Detroit. Now, obviously, they had 3 all pros on that offensive line. That is going to aid your running attack. And it's a chicken and egg question about how you go about it and what you need to do. And as we said earlier, you've got to have the mentality that if you can get an elite running back whose career lasts 6 years, that's a big win.
No doubt.
Because of the nature of the injuries at the position, et cetera. That would be a great, great win. Now, having said that, I think that, you know, you can win with a good offensive line. But when you have, you know, when you're relying too much on a running back to make your line better, you got major issues to worry about.
And very seldom can you do that because there's only so many Saquon Barkleys and Derrick Henrys to go around.
Right.
It's also worth remembering, and I think we have pointed this out before, but DeAndre Swift and Ben Johnson have worked together before.
Yeah.
And after one season of working together, DeAndre Swift was deemed expendable by the Lions.
Yeah.
So you don't know what that history means in terms of being a positive thing or a negative thing. DeAndre Swift had a career high in carries last year. I don't think that will be the case next year. They're likely to get somebody who is a complement to DeAndre Swift so he can play to his strengths, which I don't always think that was the case this past season with whether it was Shane Waldron or Thomas Brown calling plays. DeAndre Swift is not a downhill runner.
Right.
And I think we found that out, or we reminded of that this year. So they need somebody who is more downhill, so DeAndre Swift can complement that in space, being the kind of runner that he is.
And I think that it, what's going to be fascinating to look at, we talked about the number of scouts that are down at the Senior Bowl and the coaches not being there. You know, one of the first orders of business is to get a player profile of what the coach likes and what he's looking for at each position. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes both with him and Dennis Allen. You need to know exactly what that profile looks like at all positions, because the things are changing. You know, it's going to be different. The scheme is changing on defense. I don't know how he'll talk about it today or how dramatically it will change, but it's certainly, you know, different requirements. It'll be interesting. Honestly, that's one of the reasons I think that that the
well, explain that,
Declan
because
Doyle,
it's a 4-3. It would be a 4-3. Yes. He's a 4-3 coach. You just mean to be more aggressive. You're looking for.
I mean, they play more man,
right,
than they do zone in the secondary. So you need guys
with Dennis Allen.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you need guys that can actually cover in a man-to-man area. The other thing is, like, I wonder, and you know, we talk about Jalen Johnson and how good he is, and how teams don't challenge him; they go somewhere else. Why wouldn't you use him? And I think Dennis Allen will to cover up to take a particular receiver out of a game. You know, you got some great receivers in the division. And now, you know, having a guy that can defend them, you want to see that happen. You want to see him following a guy around the field more.
You would like to see that. I sometimes think that's a little overstated just from my point of view, because I do think you can game plan knowing that. You mm-hmm. can maybe take advantage of some things that creates, because you're like, okay, fine, go ahead. We'll beat you with our other 10.
Yeah, and that
and that's fine.
But from a defensive coaching standpoint, that means you're taking like a Justin Jefferson out of the game, if indeed you decide to do that.
If you indeed decide to do that. Because there are risks involved in both.
Exactly. Cases.
Yeah, but I think it's a good point. Dennis Allen will articulate his philosophy a little more clearly later today.
Safeties, David. You know, the Bears have kind of used two safeties, one covering one half of the field, the other. They haven't really used the traditional strong and free. I think maybe this would be more of a return to that. And if that's the case, what is Jaquan Brisker? Is he no longer a strong safety because you worry about the tackling and you worry about the helmet?
I don't know where he fits in and how much you can count on him. And he fits into the category I previously was describing, a guy that was drafted by Ryan Poles.
Yes.
One of his early draft picks. You had a lot of hope. But now his past can't be paralyzed by that, because you have to really look at him objectively. And objectively speaking, fair or not, I'm not sure how much you can trust him, only because of how he now has a concussion history. And is for his own best interest and for your team's best interest, you really have to be careful in counting on him too much.
Yeah, I just think that like player profiles shift and change depending on how you're going to run your defense and your offense and what, you know, we've talked about the idea that Ben Johnson is sort of not a guy that is reliant upon one particular scheme, but he has his own way of doing things.
Yes.
And you know, I want to get back to what the Belichick thing was, just because I thought that was a very interesting conversation. They were on the Let's Go portion of the you know, Tom Brady used to be on that, and Belichick has taken over because Brady's got more responsibilities. And it'll be interesting who takes Tom, if Tom comes back, if he's with the Raiders or if he's staying in the booth, I don't know. But I'm just, they were having a conversation, Jim Gray and Bill, and Bill was saying that that Parcells always taught that players are more important than coaches and that players win championships. And he rattled off the number of great players that were on his various teams. And then Jim said something about the Lombardi Trophy, and Bill said, well, they ought to name it the Brady Trophy because he won 7, right? Yeah. And like, if you have that mentality, if you believe that, you know, if you believe that philosophy that players win titles, then it's not about the new coach. It's about how you use the players that you have and how you get better players and fill them in.
Yeah, it's really both. And that example was funny, and I think they can find another trophy to name after Tom Brady. But yeah, it's definitely both. Lombardi, great coach. Brady, great player. But what Bill Belichick was saying was somewhat self-deprecating because he did not want to say, well, it's all about me and I outcoached Sean McVay and that's why we won a Super Bowl, or whatever the case may be. Yeah.
Whomever he may have outcoached.
Whoever may have outcoached.
But he did that as an assistant coach. He came up with unbelievable game plans as a defensive assistant that are, you know, raved about, and that's how Parcells ended up being the guy that won titles.
Speaking of coaches, JT Barrett is the new Bears quarterbacks coach.
That's right.
He was a college teammate of Joshua Perry, who is the analyst for Chicago Sports Network and works for NBC as well. And that's who we're going to talk to next about JT Barrett, because they were teammates.
And we can ask him about the offensive line coach.
Yes.
I'm sure he's following the team very closely.
Justin Fry.
And we'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw. It is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Joshua, good morning.
Joshua Perry, college football analyst.
What people are going to appreciate about him is he is a very serious, disciplined person. Even though he's young, he's got this older aura, kind of an old soul about him.
Co-host of the Big College Football Show on Chicago Sports Network.
Temperature started to turn up between me and you a little bit today. You think we're going to be able to get to the show?
Yeah, we will.
Ohio State Buckeye.
Repping the Block O, played at The Ohio State University, linebacker, team captain, national champ.
Joshua Perry with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is fun to get a chance to talk to Joshua Perry. He, of course, knows a little something about winning a title, knows a little something about the new Bears offensive quarterbacks coach, and we welcome him to the show, The Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. He does a great job on the Chicago Sports Network, NBC. Joshua, good morning. How you doing?
Doing well. I appreciate you having me on the show today.
Well, we're really looking forward to talking to you. So, obviously, you know JT Barrett. He was the quarterback the year you guys won. You went through so many quarterbacks that year. It was kind of extraordinary. I think it was three different quarterbacks in one season, as I recall, because JT got injured. But now he's back in Chicago. I know you guys are friends. Are you excited? Have you talked to him? What do you think? How's he going to do?
No, I'm very excited for him. I think this is a great opportunity. You know, he's a guy who's kind of worked his way up the ladder, you know, tried to play professionally. It doesn't work out for majority of us, and then got right into coaching. And I think he's going to be great here in the city, particularly because of his personality and what that's going to mean for Caleb Williams there. I reached out to JT, haven't heard back from him. I guess he's a little busy these days, which I totally understand. But this is going to be really good. And, you know, I talked to Haw a little bit about it, but I think part of Caleb's development is reliant on buy-in and trust in the personalities that he's around. And I think that JT, just from his personality, but the way that he was able to lead us as a player, I know that's grown now that he's a coach. I think he creates that buy-in with Caleb right away.
So when you look at the impact he can have, obviously coaches provide direction. They provide, in some cases, somebody who could be a confidant if they're close enough in age, as JT Barrett seems to be, very relatable. So there's that aspect, Joshua. But I also wonder, technically, can he help Caleb Williams? In what ways do you think he'll help Caleb Williams the most?
Well, I think it's going to be from the standpoint of having Caleb really believe in the scheme. You know, one of the things that Caleb has shown that he'll do, and he did it in college, he did it throughout his rookie year, is he'll freelance. You know, he's got so much talent that he believes, you know, anytime he chooses, he can make the big play. And in the NFL, it's a really difficult way to operate. JT Barrett was a very decorated quarterback when he was at Ohio State. He was, you know, all Big Ten, everything, right? Very productive, has a lot of trophies on his mantle. And you can make an argument that the only way he was able to do that was because he believed in coaching and believed in scheme. And so I think there's this ability to go to a guy who is immensely talented and basically explain to him that if he can marry his talent with the buy-in to the scheme, the sky is the limit, right? And so I think that's where it's going to start. I think they're going to have to spend a ton of time together in the meeting room, really building trust, speaking the same language. You know, JT kind of proving that he does have this knowledge and the expertise, but it's going to come down to having Caleb really function within the offense, right? Like a guy like Jared Goff putting up numbers that he did, and I get he was a number one overall pick, but the idea that Jared Goff was able to put up the numbers that he did based off of what we saw earlier in his career, a guy as talented as Caleb should be able to absolutely thrive in an offense like this.
You know, it's interesting to me. JT obviously has been in the meeting rooms, right? He's been there with Ben Johnson. So there's a familiarity there. The NFL, as we all know, is a difficult business, and you need people in the room you can trust. So how does he relate with Ben Johnson? How does he reflect what he's trying to do? And do you think it's going to be significantly different from Detroit to Chicago, given the different personnel involved?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're going to have to be these changes, right? Like, Everything can't be exactly what it was in Detroit. But I think there are some common things that always cross over. Number one is Ben Johnson's going to want to get the offensive line right so they can have a strong run game, they can protect their quarterback, right? Like, that's not something philosophically that's ever going to change. I think Ben Johnson's going to look around and say, you know, maybe need another tight end so we can get things rocking the way that it was in Detroit. But from the offensive skill standpoint, I think they're starting at a pretty good spot with what they have out there, Rome being a young guy. And DJ, we've seen what he's like when he's fully engaged at his top end, right? So I think he's now saying, okay, I had this chess piece, that chess piece, this chess piece. All of a sudden, the guys are a little bit different, but we got some good pieces there. So he's going to find creative ways through the formations, through the shifts and the motions, and ultimately through the post-snap to get those guys into a position where they can thrive. That's what you're going to see here. It's not going to be the exact same, but you get a guy who understands how to move chess pieces around the board. Ultimately, he can tailor things to fit what guys he has. The thing that I'm excited about, and it's why I keep going back to this idea that buy-in is going to be important. It's going to feel weird. It's going to feel different. It's probably going to ask guys to do things that they don't necessarily want to do all the time. But when everybody gets to the right spot and they're all utilized in the right ways within that offense, we've seen where every type of playmaker has their opportunity to make plays.
Joshua, the Bears reportedly have interviewed Ohio State offensive line coach Justin Fry. What's your reaction to that? And why do you think that sometimes the NFL teams looking to revitalize their offensive line now are increasingly looking to the college coaching profession, because those guys coming to the league, they don't necessarily have the history, but they do have the skill set?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm a little bit upset about this one. Justin Fry is phenomenal. He's become a personal friend of mine. But I think he's a fantastic coach. I had an opportunity to sit down with him before Ohio State played Oregon during the regular season. I was just asking him about his offensive line. I thought that they were playing pretty well. And he was like, listen, man, we're not very deep. He's like, but I like the top five to six guys that we have. As long as we can stay healthy, I think we're going to have a pretty good shot. And then in that game, Josh Simmons, who was a transfer that he developed into a first-round pick for this upcoming draft, he gets hurt. And then down the line, they got a couple more guys who gets hurt. Seth McLaughlin, the guy who everybody said couldn't snap the ball, transferred from Alabama, became an All-American Remington Award winner at Ohio State. And he just kept having guys ready. And I remember the conversation where he's like, I don't know how good we can be if we have to go to our depth. But he worked with those guys. He grinded those guys. He got them right. And I think for the Bears, looking at where their offensive line is, you need a developer. You need a guy like Justin Fry who is maniacal. Watching this dude coach in practice, he is a maniac in a good way. I mean, like, voice is hoarse at the end of the day. And, you know, you can't coach pros like that. You kind of can, right? Because You got to show you care about them, but you got to get on them. They need to get a lot better. I think this would be a home run if Chicago ends up hiring him from the standpoint of the development, Justin Fry wasn't known as a great recruiter at Ohio State. You don't have to do that in the NFL, so it doesn't matter. And then with Press Taylor, I think those guys have a little commonality from a pass game standpoint, having worked with Chip Kelly in the past. And so, you know, you have that works as well. I'm into it. I don't want to see him leave Ohio State for very selfish reasons, but I know the Bears could really use him.
Yeah, you know, I think that's well said. Very good stuff, Joshua, because the Bears, more than anything else, they got to get that line
that's
right.
That's a top priority.
They don't have a lot of guys. Joshua, thank you. Great stuff. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Joshua.
I appreciate you guys. Take care.
That's Joshua Perry. That's good stuff.
Yeah, he has great insight into the college game. Certainly played a little bit in the league, so he knows what a good offensive line looks like.
312-644-6767, Mullion Hall on the score.